Thank you to our speakers for such insightful presentations. And now we'll open the floor for questions. First, we'll take all the questions from the room. So just feel free to raise your hand and we'll give you a microphone. And then after that, we'll move on to those that are connecting via webcast so that all those remotely connected can also join. So let's start. Javier Garrido here. No, it's not working. Wait a second. They'll work it up.
Yeah, can you hear me now? Yes.
Yes.
Hi, Javier Garrido from JP Morgan. Thank you for the presentation, and particularly thank you for the lot of detail on the drivers of the bigger investment plan. What I was missing was a similar level of capillarity on your returns. So you could elaborate a little bit on where you see you can get to that 9.5% allowed ROE, where you think it's going to be more challenging, I think particularly in the distribution business, because transmission FERC regulated is totally different space, but it would be interesting to see why you think you can close the gap with the allowed ROE on a sustainable basis compared to what has happened in the past. That would be the first question. Second question would be on what is your views, your judgment on the regulatory noises that we hear every now and then. I mean, sitting on this side of the pond, it's difficult to have an accurate view on how realistic some headlines that we hear every now and then from state senators here or some regulators there about the need to tighten the allowed ROEs in a context where power prices are increasing, where affordability is coming to the fore. So what is your take on such comments? Thank you.
Thank you, Javier. Well, first of all, about our returns, we have achieved our low ROEs in the past, actually, in the last years, and we see that we are also in the good path to achieve them in the future. And as you said, very well said, FERC has normally a higher return, okay? And then in the States, you have, compared with FERC, a lower return, but always in this mix that finally is giving us the 9.5 that we are projecting. About the regulatory noises, maybe here the best thing is to be factual. And just very recently, National Grid got approved its rate case in New York, which is our main jurisdiction, right, by far. And the approval was for 3 years at 9.5%, same similar level of the returns that we are envisioning. So we think that we are in the range of what we have seen in New York, but also we see it recently in Florida and in other parts of the country. And maybe you can give some more color to it.
So I think that the best way to sum that up is the chair of the New York Commission recently during the deliberations, not only on National Grid, but on Central Hudson, which had outcomes similar to each other, said very bluntly, you can't get electricity for free. And then there was a discussion among the sitting seven commissioners talking about the laws that are passed in the state that demand the investments that they're having to approve. So I think there's two things. One is the facts are we have to invest in the system because the law, the regulations, and the orders require it. Two, the commission acknowledges that in the decisions that they've rendered. And three, we are working round the clock to talk to every legislator. When I said thousands, sometimes I feel like I've actually participated directly in thousands. But we have teams that are located in New York in every region of the state, over 15 of them. And they deploy at the local level and the state level. And the other thing we're doing is we're bringing them to see the investments. We've had multiple tours of substation work, new conductoring, and we explain to them how their money is basically at work. And then we tie it to the projects we proposed in the current filed case. So it's education, it's recognition of results, of actions from state legislators and regulatory bodies. And we have a very positive regulatory environment in New York. And I don't think Maine is any different from this. As I talked about, there was a grid resiliency plan and a integrated grid plan proceeding where they brought all the stakeholders in and they said, this is what we expect the system to do. Storm response and how are you gonna integrate electrification of buildings and transit. They set the rules of the road. Our rate case filing responded to that signal and put in the investments. Question is, how much investment, what's the pace of it, and when does it happen? But our assumptions are conservative, and there is plenty of capital demand between all of our network states.
Thank you. Okay. Any other question? Oh, wow, everything is very clear, apparently. Okay. Andrew, thank you.
Yeah, hi, it's Andrew Mulder from Credit Sites. I'm probably going to be cheeky because I'm not asking a question about networks, but I am asking one about the US, and I figure you guys are well placed to answer. I really just want to know what the mood is in New York and in the US towards offshore wind. I mean, we hear Trump and all his pronouncements and everything else, and Orsted. But I also hear that you haven't actually written down the value of your lease areas connected with I think so, some of your offshore projects. So I guess that means you do actually expect offshore wind to come back sometime in the future. So could you perhaps just sort of summarize what, you know, what the view is that you have of US offshore wind?
Yes, happy to talk about power a little bit. Yeah, well, first of all, as was commented by Pedro and by the chairman this morning, our Vineyard Wind 1, which is the offshore wind farm that we are building as we speak, now is more than 50% operational. Is delivering energy, and I think we are in a good trend to continue finishing in the next months to come. And then, as you are saying, currently saying, we have other leases in United States. We have to maybe remind that we didn't acquire the leases through very expensive auctions that others did in nearby, etc. No, in our case, we bought the leases at a very, let's gonna say, affordable price, compared with what you could see later on in these auctions that I mentioned before in New York, right? And yes, you're right. I mean, I think these leases, they are there for the future, and there is a long runway for them to be exploited because they are unaffordable to maintain, and therefore we have to see in the future if there is any change and there is any possibility to move forward. The only thing that we can say is that we will be always very prudent. We will move forward only when we see that this is creating value to the society, to the shareholders, and also that in New England there is no many other options. If you want to really have the power that you need for the future, probably offshore has to be part of the equation, as any other source of energy. We are really very much resonating on all of the above, thinking that every electron that you can produce in the country will be absolutely needed. So let's see what happens in the future. Yeah.
Hi, Gonzalo Sanchez Bordona from UBS. I have one question, it's a little bit of a follow-up. Most of the bigger part of these plans are based on rate cases that have not been finished or completed yet. So I'm assuming you probably, I guess this is the question, are you taking a conservative view on the investments there, and particularly in the context of inflation? Obviously it's slowing down a little bit, but that continues to be a situation there. So I guess the bigger question is, how conservative are you on those assumptions and whether you see room for having more investments? And same sort of approach also for the returns. I mean, you seem very confident that returns are improving, but obviously this has been an issue in the past for Avangrid in terms of the achieved versus the allowed ROE. I understand the energy dynamics and the energy demand evolution obviously is quite different now than it has been historically, but any color, I mean, you provided already a little bit of color, but I was wondering whether we're looking at a conservative plan and things could get better from here, or you are pretty sure that this is basically what it is. Thank you.
Yes, Gonzalo. Well, the intent is to have a prudent plan always on the table. That's been the intent. Actually, we saw that $5 billion are already authorized, okay? And you have to also to remember that an important part also of the investments, they are FERC-related. Not only this, the rate cases are incorporated into the pot, into the numbers, right? And we are expecting to close, as we said in the morning, the rate case of Maine somehow in the third quarter of next year. And then the duration, we are filing for 5 years, but even if finally it were 3 or 2, still we will be covering the 28 period that we are discussing today here. In the case of New York, we are expecting to have a solution for the rate case in around Q2 2026. And again, the same thing, we're filing for 5 years, but even if we had 3 years, as we have now today, we will be covering the whole 28 period. Yes, there are more opportunities, but we are not putting them on the table because we want to be prudent with our numbers. And something that is really staggering, and for you, for the people that has been visiting US recently, the reality is that infrastructure is very old. We have, as Joe mentioned, we have really a very high percentage of our assets that they are 40, 50, 60 years old. And here in Europe, sometimes we complain about 30, 40 year old. In US, we say, well, not that old. So yeah, that's the case that we're facing. So we think that the numbers, they are prudent, yes.
Ahmed, over there.
Hi, Ahmed from Jefferies. Can you just remind us what is the overall allowed ROE today, and what is the achieved ROE expectation for 2025? And then talk a little bit about the path to this 9.5%, because it seems like sort of a lot of the rate cases in distribution business are going to be in 2026. So is this really 9.5 a number for 27, 28? And then, you know, let's say you don't really see a huge improvement into 26, and then there's a step improvement. I'm just trying to understand what's the starting point and the profile.
And again, I want to say that you, in order to make the compound, you have to do an average between FERC and the rate cases. And the FERC system is quite different to the rate cases because it's just based on prudent investment that is reviewed every year. That's it. Huh? So Justin, maybe you can give it more color about it.
Sure. Good afternoon. So to answer your question, if we look at our current composite ROE as it sits today, in our distribution rate cases, it's around 9.2% across our jurisdictions. And as Jose Antonio said, for transmission, it ranges from 10.6% up to 11.7%. So when you take the composite of both the distribution and transmission, you know, ROEs, you're effectively just below 9.5%. As we consider, you know, what is the evolution of the ROEs in the forward periods, and how do you consider that? You know, recall that the main rate case was agreed 2 years ago, the New York rate case, you know, 2.5 years ago. And if we understand what happened with interest rates have gone up. That's why you have seen more favorable, let's say, ROE outcomes in New York. So as we look into the evolution of when to expect, whether it's in 26, 27, 28 for this ROE, we're almost already at the 9.5% ROE because of the transmission investments. In addition to that, we're investing more heavily, as you've seen in the plan, you know, into transmission. So that's also going to help with the weighting of the ROE. So therefore, it drives, you know, a higher ROE on a composite or consolidated basis. In addition to that, we would expect higher ROEs out of the outcomes, which again will be for the second half of 26.
Well, apparently now everything is very clear. So thank you very much to our presenters. Now we move on to the UK. Thank you.